Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics. Welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Fred Schenkelberg.
And this is Mirjan Sahi. Welcome.
Hey, welcome, and good to talk to you again. It's been a little while, and I'm in a just a tear this week to record a bunch because of the different holidays and all the other stuff going on this time of year. I kind of let it go until it was like 2 days away from doing some more podcasts, and I put the word out, and everybody picked a time. There was no conflicts, and so hopefully this will take us through a few more weeks. We'll be in good shape, and then I'll be recording again. So stand by. But that's a little behind the scenes thing. But just before we hit record, we were talking about how AI is just we're still waiting for it to be useful.
Right off the bat, we're hitting it right there.
Yeah, but it makes me think of, you know, a more important topic, and I think one that AI systems and just a lot of people don't do is say, well, we want to make a change. And I think you know about change management, but if we want to change something, so let's say a new reliability joins a team and says, oh, we need to, you know, improve the design for reliability practices. Okay. The first question you get is just blank stares going, okay, what are we doing that needs to be different? And then you'll get just the resistance to change. Well, why do I want to change? What's in it for me? And unless you're very adept at change management, we often miss that and says, oh, this just makes it better. Well, it makes what better? You know, so I don't know. Have you run into this at all where you're trying to influence somebody and they just don't get it? Maybe.
For sure. I think that there's, in my experience, like sometimes very understandably, especially when you have a lot going on and, you know, product development timelines are very short, teams just need to go, and to come in and say, no, we got to slow down and, you know, do this a little bit differently and such, of course, understandably is met with resistance initially, because you have to prove that it's useful, because people don't have time. Like, you know, the engineers are typically very overworked, which is very understandable. Yeah. I mean, definitely. I think it's taken me in one of my jobs, I think it took me like maybe 9 months to build trust with another team too. Mm-hmm. enough to like start, you know, changing things and doing things differently. So yeah, for sure. You have to prove value. I think that is a fair ask from them. You have to prove the value.
And what I have found, it's not just that, oh, it'll lower the failure rate. You know, an electrical engineer working on a board within a larger system is not paying the warranty out of their pocket. They're still going to get their paycheck. If the product ships on time, they get their bonus or whatever that system is set up. And lowering the failure rate may not be of any value to them directly. You know, they might think, well, that's a good thing to do, you know, kind of theoretically, but what's in it?
I think that's a bit cynical. I don't know. I think that the engineers inherently, in my experience, I think they, of course, what you're saying is factually, like, you know, yes, they're not directly paying for it, but I think engineers take pride in making sure that they're building a good product.
Right. Well, put it in the context that the program manager says, you know, Tuesday have your designs frozen, Wednesday we start shipping or something like that. I mean, oh, by the way, you have to design for assembly, you have to design for this, you got to design for that, you got on and on and on. And somebody just left, so now you got 6 more boards to design as an electrical engineer. Mm-hmm. And the deadline hasn't changed. And we're not giving you a pay raise.
Yes.
By the way.
Very typical. Yeah. Minor detail.
And you come in and say, all right, let's do something different. It'll take some time. We got to train you on it. And they're like, what? You're going to take 2 days out of my life, which I don't have. Mm-hmm. And it's for the good of the world that we don't create products that go straight to landfill. All right. Yeah, I get that. But I don't think that's a strong enough argument or reason to make a change.
Yes. And it is not necessarily always easy, because I think proving the benefit of something that didn't happen,
mm-hmm.
that doesn't happen or hasn't happened yet is always difficult. When there is a fire, you know, quote unquote, metaphorically,
visual thermal event.
Yeah. Metaphorically speaking, not a literal fire.
Yeah.
And in that mode, when you solve a problem and you're doing reliability analysis and all that, or you're, you know, finding the solution through root cause analysis, of course, it's much easier to see the benefit. But when it hasn't happened, or the likelihood of it occurring is unknown, is very, of course, it's difficult for people to appreciate the value. So yeah, it's not super easy, and it does take some convincing. I found that I like to go about it in. I think I know this is a bit like a loaded term, but like going about it from a DFMEA perspective, mm-hmm. but more so just talking about like, have we thought about, you know, these scenarios? Have we thought about this failure mode? Have we thought about that use case? Do we have data to show? I mean, my favorite question is, do we have data to show, or that, you know, this is or is not going to occur in this way? Right. And when most of the time the answer is no, ultimately you get to no, then I think at that point it's kind of landed that, yeah, this is a thing that could happen. And we don't know what is the, you know, what the impact of that could be, for instance. And at that point, it's usually like how it starts. So that's one way.
Yeah. And you're always going to find something with no data on it and go solve it. And especially if it's connected to the FMEA, you can focus on the vital few, the things that were at the top of that list by that team. So mm-hmm. it builds on stuff they've already identified as, oh, we need more information, or we need better data, or we need to change the design, or whatever. But it's, I find that's still, it gets them to say, yeah, it's a priority. We got to work on that. I'll put it on my list. I've done that before. And they ask me, when are you going to get it done? I say Tuesday. And then after a few cycles of that, they figure out, I didn't specify which Tuesday. you know, sometime in 1987 or something like that. Yeah, I just need a time machine to go back there
right,
and do it.
Right, right. Yes.
And so, but I think there are a handful of ways to help a design team, individuals in a design team, or even directors, level up and say, all right, yeah, we're trying to create something so we don't have failures late in the program, or it fails in the field, or we can ship on time. It's going to be functional. The odds that it's good or good enough is all there. And part of that is that design for reliability stuff, FMEAs and design guidelines and derating mm-hmm. and stress strength calculations, all that stuff takes time to think it through and get it right. But it also, like you said, avoids problems happening. The fires don't occur. We're not up. Yeah. Oh, we're spending all weekend just to make the last deadline. But where it comes in is like, it's to say, all right, why are you so busy? In what's your experience with this? You know, and if it's the case where, well, late in the program, we're always going to be working overtime, and we identify what has to be solved at the last minute, and then we work like crazy to fix it, right? Do you enjoy that? Do you get overtime? Is that beneficial to you and your career and your family life? or whatever it is. And they go, no, that's the no I'm looking for. What's their motivation to avoid something? The other argument is, you say, all right, do you have life insurance or health insurance? Do you have car insurance? Mm. Have you been in an accident today? You know, you carry it mostly because it's a law. Otherwise, we get in trouble for some of this insurance type stuff. But design for reliability is like insurance. It's an investment to avoid those fires, I'm using air quotes, later. And if you enjoy being the hero and working overnight to solve something that maybe even the mistake you made caused, and then it's a threat, by the way.
Yeah,
then that's fine. yet I'm going to work with this team. And and part of it is, you know, if you enjoy just being overworked because you're spending a whole lot of time fixing problems that should have been right from the start, if that's the case, and it's like, well, let's spend a little bit more time getting it right from the start. And then you won't have that. Then you'll be able to refine these features and optimize and do all the stuff, you know, you learned in school how to do, whereas opposed to quick troubleshoot and patch. But the other part is that trust part. And I think you hit on a really key topic there. And that's hard to get by just saying, oh, do you have insurance? You know, that you don't get it that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sometimes it does take time. Yeah. To your point, it's beyond the conversation. And sometimes it's just showing bit by bit the value of the work. Mm-hmm. I mean, my example, for instance, you know, I went through several cases in the case that I was mentioning where I showed okay, if we do this, we prevent this issue. And, you know, and of course, like the issue went away. And, you know, it was very clear, like how much, you know, as you said, like firefighting can be avoided if we do certain things. And so that kind of just over time, a few, you know, 2-3 cases later, now it had become the muscle memory was there and the team appreciated it and they wanted to do it. And, you know, it was helpful. So, it does take time. Or in the cases, the alternative is, like you said, when it's a really bad, again, metaphorical fire where there's just, you know, daily meetings and, you know, executive updates, all hands on deck. And it's just, you know, it's just painful for everybody. Late meetings, early morning meetings, you're up all night, like trying to finalize the slides. You become a very good PowerPoint engineer. because you're summarizing everything that was learned in the last 24 hours. Those are painful. And so when those happen, of course, if the team has been through those, then afterwards you're trying to be like, okay, now we're going to do things differently. Generally, people will nod and be like, yep, okay, yeah, let's do it differently.
I call that technique the never waste a good disaster.
I like it. See, another t-shirt. I love that.
Another t-shirt. Oh, no. You're going to be a thing. It's going to be a thing now.
This is going to be a thing. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. Right. So but the idea is that there was one organization I work with, and I've told this story a handful of times, I know, yet they had such big design issues for some of their products. They would assign a project manager and have a budget for the staff and all the stuff they did to solve a problem. And they were in the, you know, some of them were $100,000, some were millions of dollars, but it was an average of $14 million per major event. Mm-hmm. And so the finance group had this, you know, this was a fix thing, a fix it type project or a repair project or whatever they call it, all hands on deck type project. And they tracked how much it actually cost. Now, they didn't track the ones that was only took a weekend to do, or it only took 3-4 people on the team to go solve it. It took them a week. Yet when you talk to engineering directors, one of the questions I always ask is, how much time does your team spend fixing previous design mistakes or previous design errors? And it varies by team and by what kind of technology they're doing, but it's around 25% of the manpower or of the hours spent by engineering is spent fixing something. Mm-hmm. But when I ask that of a team that's in a maturity of 4 or 5, they proactively think about reliability and solve problems, do design for reliability type stuff very diligently. It's more like 5-10% of the time. You're not ever going to be perfect, yet it becomes just every now and then we got to go back and fix something. Yet, or more often they complain about is that the team's gotten so good that the marketing folks want to spring new features on us last minute. So they have to guard against that.
Yes.
That's going to happen anyway, whether you're a good team or not.
But the idea is
that there is a financial benefit for the organization. So if it's a program manager or director, then you say, you know, what if you had 10% of that time back what could you do? Well, we wouldn't have to work Saturdays, you know, or we could actually go home on time or whatever it is. And, but the idea is for the person you're talking to, what's in it for them? Is it time? Is it pressure? Is it, you know, shorter hours or being focused on things that are adding features and capability to the design versus fixing to the design? It's design for reliability activities is an enhancement to good design practices, just basic engineering. And that on its face is hard to sell, yet avoiding the pain points, I find is the first motivator to get somebody mm-hmm. to go. But every person has a different piece of that, the way they experience that pain. And that's what makes it, I think, so very difficult, because you have a room of five people on a team, it's going to be five different reasons that they would buy into it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's a very good point. Depending on the person that you're talking to, it could be very different for the engineers versus the marketing people versus quality, whoever.
That you're or manufacturing or procurement mm-hmm. or anybody. Yeah. So part of that process of getting the team to come up to speed, and I like the way you described it, that just now, is that it takes time and it's showing that there is benefit and helping them realize, hey, you know, that we're coming to the end of this project and it's kind of going smooth. And everybody's, I was on one team that was like that, and everybody was kind of looking around, when's the next disaster going to occur? When is this thing going to catch on fire? You know, I brought my sleeping bag in just in case, and you know, and like, no, you spent a bunch of time doing the derating, doing the FMEAs, and focusing on making sure the design was robust. Oh, yeah, okay. You have to remind them of that linkage. I think that's mm-hmm. the key part.
Yes, yeah, exactly. Yeah. I was asking a previous team of mine, like, you know, now that I'm not there anymore, I'm like, so, you know, how
do they miss you?
Oh, my God. I mean, not to brag, but yes, every once in a while I get a text and they're like, so are you done, like, doing with whatever this is that you think you're doing? Are you going to come back? And then of course I say, I'm having a lot of fun. Not yet anyway.
Well, I just thought of a topic for the next episode. I have to write this down actually.
Yes, please write it down. I mean, it's to your point about reminding people, I think it's incredible how quickly it can be forgotten, right? Right. Oh, sure. You know, I think like one of the things that I worked on, you know, it has done pretty well from what I understand so far. And because we did DFR, and who would have thought? And it's kind of like what I said earlier. It's like, you know, it's hard to appreciate the people when things go well. They're like, well, of course they went well.
Of course, you know,
of course, like that's how it's supposed to be. But it's easily forgotten, like, how much work went into that. It was, you know, every week we were talking about different analyses and, you know, what specs should we use, and planning ahead and talking about, you know, what are we going to do at the build? What are we going to do in production? And there was so much work that went into preventing issues that, unless you're talking to the people that were directly involved, unfortunately, it can be hard to, hard for other people to appreciate. So I think it'd be important that you make a very good point about reminding people and kind of like showcasing. I think it kind of goes to the celebration part of the last step in AD that we've talked mm-hmm. about before too. Right. The celebration and showcasing, you know, this is what went into now not having a problem is such an important step that unfortunately is not as utilized as much as it could be in organizations.
Making it very direct, you know, remember when Sarah found or noticed this problem and we investigated and found that it was likely to occur mm-hmm. in 20% of the products and it was a trivial fix? Remember that? Probably not. But that avoided, mm-hmm. you know, we would have found it later if we hadn't moved this effort up front. We certainly would have found it later and it would have been way more expensive to fix and way more time consuming. You remember the good old days, air quotes, when you used to do that a lot? But it is,
yeah,
it is, you have to make sure that the value is felt and seen. And part of that is you got to build the team, and goes back to that trust that you get the baby steps to start, and then you make more progress and so on. But it can be done. It's amazing that paying attention, what's important for the engineering teams and for the people you're working with. It's that WIFM, I think, is the short version of it. What's in it for them makes or breaks a deal of making a change, whether it's reliability or not, in my opinion. So,
yeah, absolutely.
Something to consider next time you walk into a team or try to implement a change.
Oh, it's so relevant. Yeah, I'm sure it won't be very long until this has to happen. I think that I love thinking about this the scope and role of a DFR, because it's a role that is that has to balance, right? You have to be able to build trust and influence the other teams, and support making, you know, a better product. You don't own all the aspects of the product,
you
per
don't
se.
Own any of it.
You don't. Well, you
that is reliability on how it's set up.
Yeah. but you're accountable for making a better product. But you're also that. What that means is also when something, you know, is happening that you don't agree with, or that is, you know, not getting the right attention, you have to, you know, fight the good fight to make it to get it the right attention. And so it can be this balance of like this dance between, you know, with other teams sometimes. And yeah, you have to. That you have to balance, and so much of it just lies on that trust that you have with the other team. So yeah, I love that about the DFR role.
Yeah, no, I do too. And once a team really sees the benefit of it, then they take over and say, "This is the way we're going to work. This is we're just going to do this now."
Yeah,
it becomes obvious. Mm-hmm. It doesn't, and it takes a little bit of energy to keep it going, but it's so much easier once the collective of the team. Not to use that word in a Star Trek form. They get it. And then it's really fun to work with that team. Hey, yeah, no, I think we've got our point across, and hopefully we get a handful of folks going, yeah, I know what you're talking about. I've been struggling with this. But if you are struggling with it, or you're wondering where to actually start in your particular circumstance, that kind of stuff, let us know. You know, we'd love the questions and comments and feedback into the show. And you can do that by going over to ascendoreliability.com/go/SOR. You can find a couple of ways to get in touch with us there. You can even leave us a voicemail, by the way, you know, so you can actually be on the show with us.
That's fun.
And you can find Mijan and I on LinkedIn and the other hosts of the show too on LinkedIn or on our about pages on Ascendo. So plenty of ways for you to join the conversation. We would really look forward to having your input of a topic or a question or an idea or even a success story. We don't get enough of those. That would be really cool to hear about. So with that, Mijan, I think we'll wrap this one up and see what kind of change comes out of this over the next decade or two, as long as this podcast episode's out there.
Love it. Sounds great.
All right. Good. We'll talk to you soon.
See you soon.
Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation if you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show. Please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.